Carl, we have David Mark Weber with us now. He's an American science fiction writer, fantasy editor of whose latest novel, I should say, was published by, I think it's pronounced Bayon Books. It's called The Sword of the South, and he's written any number of other science fiction and fantasy tomes. And his thinking is, why are sci-fi and fantasy more popular than ever? Now, I say that, Carl, because I don't know about you, but when I was a teenager, I was reading, you know, Heinlein, anything that he'd written.
Mm-hmm.
I loved science fiction, you know, Asimov and a few
oh, yes.
others.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about David Mark Weber. Welcome to Smith Sabatino.
Hi, thank you.
Tell me, why do you think it is that, you know, that Ant-Man and Jurassic World and Game of Thrones and all these others, and this new Star Wars thing that's coming out in December, why is it so popular?
Well, I think the rest of the world just caught up with you and me. I was reading science fiction in grammar school, and since I will be 63 in October, that was quite a while ago. I think that one thing that's happened is that Hollywood has finally realized how popular and appealing fantasy and science fiction are, and they are voting with their production money now, which means that they're offering us a larger menu, and they are discovering that no matter how many fantasy and science fiction movies they make, there's always an audience waiting for more. So I think that it's not so much a case of science fiction and fantasy changing suddenly as much as it is a case of the electronic media in particular making it available to an audience that might not have been reading it in book form. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And do you think that the technology that we have today that creates these images and special effects, like we used to have to use our imagination to mm-hmm. create that in the books that we read, but now it's all done for us.
I think that's a huge factor, and if you look at the way that special effects have altered since, for example, George Powell and the claymation kind of animation, you can do so much more in a movie or a TV format than you used to be able to do. And so I think that the spectacular visual effects that are legitimately part of fantasy and science fiction have profited from the fact that we no longer have blue screen and other problems that detract from our ability to really submerge ourselves in the visual experience.
Right. Do you remember the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Oh, yes.
The original one with Michael Rennie.
Yes.
And then they made a remake of that about 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
as I recall.
Yes.
I loved the first one, even though it had the suspense of what might be, rather than the visual images of what an artist might create for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that I preferred the original of that as well. As a matter of fact, I have a tendency to prefer the original of a lot of the ones that they're doing remakes of. Not all of them, but certainly many of them. I think that you may have something there about the suspense, but I think that part of the reason the first one succeeded was because no one had done it yet.
Mm.
It's kind of like if you're old enough to remember sitting in the theater for the first Star Wars movie when that ship comes overhead.
I do. Yeah.
Okay, that's the iconic image of Star Wars for the people who saw it first run in the theater because no one had ever done it before. Now it's been done, and so it has lost, that type of effect has lost a lot of the initial visual impact that it had. And I think that may have been a problem for The Day the Earth Stood Still's remake. Now, I personally think that the first one was better written, too.
Yeah, I do, too.
But that's another matter.
which Mr. Weber called Sabatino here, which I was, as both of you were, and I'm a man plus 60, mm-hmm. who loved the comic, and I always enjoyed reading them, and I always found that the original writing was so well done. Do you believe Hollywood today can capture that? Because what I've seen, and I do love sci-fi. I'm a buff, have been since childhood. But I love the written. I love the storyline. I love the ability to be able to carry the what the author is trying to get at. Besides the graphic images, my father was a graphic designer, by the way, and I used to watch him create the word, put pictures into words from the words, and it was always the words first. Have we lost that? Do we still have that, or is that gone now?
I think it depends on where you go. There is a tendency in Hollywood, unfortunately, to write down to the lowest common denominator and to underestimate their audiences. I think that has been a problem in some features. I think they're doing a better job recently in not doing that dumbing down effect. But like you, I came to science fiction through the written word. I read my first science fiction novel when I was about 10 years old, and I was off to the races from there. So I think that you're talking different media. The written word has its own cadence, its own flow, its own beauty, and its own ability to evoke images and an unlimited special effects budget. When you get into a visual medium, a graphic medium, you begin limiting yourself as the author or the artist. And sometimes what you are limiting yourself to is very, very, very good. Other times you wonder why you tried. And I think that right now Hollywood seems to be getting it right more than they're getting it wrong. I have a friend who is a huge movie buff who is really upset with the reboot of Star Trek, the second one especially, because she felt that they could have gone somewhere else besides recycling the Wrath of Khan kind of thing.
I would agree.
I think a lot of people would agree. I think that they did... Once they decided they were going to do that, they did a good job with it. Now, my kids and I just saw the new Terminator movie, and I realize that some of the critics are panning it, but I have to say, as a writer, that I think that what they did with the new storyline was very effective.
Agreed.
So there's high points and there's low points, and the glitz and glitter of the special effects won't carry you if the story is defective, or if the audience feels like, well, this was just, you know, a shell game where you didn't really show me anything new. You can get away with doing a reboot of an older movie and not doing anything new if the older movie is, in fact, an older movie that doesn't have a huge audience, current audience, that's going to say, hey, wait, you know, what was this all about?
Yeah.
But I think that I am best known for my science fiction, to be honest. I've got about 63 novels out, and all but four of them are science fiction. But I really wanted to write fantasy in the first place, which is one reason that I'm happy to have this fifth fantasy novel.
Well, what's the difference, though, between fantasy and science fiction?
Science fiction... Okay, in a way, they're both fairy tales. Science fiction is technical society's fairy tales. Instead of having wizards and wood sprites, you've got scientists and AI and cyborgs. But both fairy tales and science fiction serve a lot of the same functions. They're cautionary tales, they're inspirational tales. Science fiction in particular is an effort to look at the future, to project. Fantasy doesn't necessarily have to do that. Fantasy can go off on a side tangent into a world where you are not trying to say, okay, where are we going to be with computers in 50 years? You're dealing with more timeless, I suppose I should say, imagery and tropes. And that lets you... in a way, make things more black and white for the reader, I guess, in a lot of ways. The best fantasy is going to have characters in it who are gray, just like in real life, but the issues can be defined clearly, and you can take them out of the current political, social construct where we're choosing up sides, and
sure.
it's very difficult to recognize virtue in somebody who you disagree with because of the amount of polarization.
I'd like you to hold your thought on that, and I don't want to talk about Jules Verne when we come back. If you can stay with us for another segment, I'd love to have you do that.
I can do that, yes.
Wonderful. This is truly fascinating for me, Carl.
Oh, it is. And, it is.
And I want to talk about Jules Verne and also the fact that of the new to continue on the new Star Wars thing that's coming out in December. I can't wait for that.
You're all a glitter.
Oh.
You're all a glitter. Well, we're going to do that, and we're going to stay a glitter. And we're going to continue on with our guest, David Weber, Carl Sabatino, Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino, America Weekend. Stay with us. We're back.
America Weekend.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
He's the king of speed, the first drag racer to top 300 miles per hour. His combined 69 victories in Top Fuel and Funny Cars places him second on the NHRA all-time list.
Far lane, the Bud King, Kenny Bernstein, at the track where he first went over 300 miles an hour. Kenny Bernstein gets the win.
So where is Kenny Bernstein now? As Kenny stepped back from driving, he continued as a team owner with his son Brandon continuing in the cockpit. Kenny's been a leader of the Professional Racing Organization, a group of drivers, owners, and mechanics working on safety and prize money issues. At the end of the 2011 season, Kenny announced his full retirement as both an owner and a driver.
Everyone today, wherever we go, they say, there's Mr. 300.
Kenny Bernstein, still the king of drag racing. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Sturgis name and title.
Rick, Lyle, Michigan. Never seen nothing like it. Laconia, Daytona, doesn't compare. It's awesome out here.
Missoula, Montana. Having a heck of a good time. You know what? It's better this year.
Today on American Biker Minute.
Do you have troubled skin or acne? With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Call Proactive Plus now and receive a 60-day risk-free trial along with two free extras and free shipping. Call 800-393-6139. That's 1-800-393-6139.
American Biker Minute's Jeff Ryan and Sturgis. Dude sitting next to you might be
a senator from South Dakota. Had a drink with him, shook his hand, a veteran from Nam. Then we ran into a PhD native doctor, look after his own people. That was remarkable.
What about the girl?
Her luggage would fit in a makeup bag. She had bling where most people didn't even know you could put it. She had a piercing with a carat diamond in it. No panty Wednesday in Hewlett.
American Biker Minute.
You can't take it all in, so you got to pick and choose what you're doing.
Your passport to the open road in 2 weeks.